Hi, I'm here with Yael Tamar, who is the Chief Marketing Officer and a partner at SolidBlock, which is a company that built a platform for and is highly active in the real estate tokenization market. She's an IBM influencer, and in 2017, she opened a blockchain strategic consulting agency and has since become a sought-after speaker at conferences worldwide, and she's a fierce advocate for female entrepreneurism and specifically women in blockchain. Recently, Yael was named regional co-chair of Fibri, which is the Netherlands-based consortium for ongoing knowledge exchange between the real estate industry, the IT sector, and blockchain. Hi, Yael. How are you doing?
Hi, Stefan. Thanks for coming to speak to me about my favorite topic.
All right. That's your favorite. That's fantastic. So let's dive right into your favorite topic. Real estate tokenization.
Right.
So you're working at SolidBlock and you're effectively having a platform for real estate tokenization. Can you give us a bit of a background why you as a company and also you personally, if you want, you went into that market and how this went?
Oh, sure, of course. So for me, it all started with probably about a decade ago when I was one of the early analysts in a financial company working on marketing real estate funds, and we were dealing with institutional investors and accredited investors, you know, guys with lots of money or moving money from one place to another. They wanted to diversify, so they wanted to choose either real estate assets or real estate funds with a specific risk management, you know, risk style and appetite and so on. And a few years later, I purchased some real estate. I understood how complex and tedious it was and also how risky it was for people who don't have a lot of money. So, I saw the dichotomy. I saw the dissonance of how, you know, people with lots of money have access to these fantastic deals that makes them even more money, and how, you know, just people, regular hardworking people, maybe even entrepreneurs, people with great ideas but very little money, have very little opportunity, specifically in this market.
So there's all this democratization of finance theme.
Right. Yeah. Right. So there's a definite dissonance because property is a basic right. You know, researchers have found that if you have property, you're several times more likely to be more successful in life and business and, you know, pursue things that you want to pursue and opportunities in life. So property ownership is really important as a base.
And property as in like real estate property, yeah?
As in real estate, that's the basic, the most basic asset class in property. For the majority of individuals, it's also the easiest for them to understand. And yet, you know, 50% of Americans, let's say, are trading on the stock market, right? So, but they're trading a much more risky products, you know, stocks and bonds and so on. So, long story short, when I started working with on blockchain 3 years ago, I founded a consulting agency. When I understood the potential of blockchain to revolutionize anything from supply chain to real estate registries, you know, to finance, of course, and IoT, I wanted to kind of make my own mark and advance one specific cause. After a few years of consulting for others and helping, you know, other people make a lot of money with whatever solution they were selling and helping them build a value proposition for governments, for banks, for, you know, enterprises and for a variety of entities. So I remembered, you know, this whole real estate dichotomy or in dissonance. And I thought, you know, blockchain is a perfect mechanism to connect the two, to give transparency, to reduce complexities of a transaction, and also involve regular, you know, hardworking people with a little bit of money who want to invest and own property. They don't have to own a whole apartment, house, or a building. They can own a fraction, and they can participate in the creation of wealth whenever that property value is going to go up.
And they can also diversify, right, which is obviously not that easy if you don't have
Absolutely.
That much money.
Yeah, because you can only buy one apartment, even if that. And when you purchase an apartment today, you effectively purchase two, one for yourself and one for the bank. So we're with fractional real estate investment, whatever amount you have, you can invest in one or several properties to diversify, absolutely.
And you've been always within the Tel Aviv ecosystem or?
So I've lived in a few places, and since I've been involved in blockchain, I can't even count the amount of different markets that I've visited to establish either local connections or to pitch or to participate in events and lecture. But, you know, Tel Aviv is my home base. And, you know, it's known as a startup nation. It's also known as a blockchain nation. And it's no secret that Israelis own a lot of real estate around the world. So it's really a great home base for creating technologies and kind of spreading them globally.
Yeah, it seems to be the first, and I mean, yeah, for a real estate blockchain, I mean, I can't see a more perfect place than Israel, really, for the two reasons that you mentioned, because it's like this high-tech nation at the same time as there is this very strong real estate, also the real estate developer market, the connection to the developer market, which means you can actually get deal flow, which is also which is also important.
Right.
Technology. So you're using blockchain, but can you be a little bit more specific? So are you using your own blockchain? Are you using a public chain? And then a little bit, well, what choices did you make and why, to the extent that you want to make this public?
So blockchain has become more or less a commodity. You know, it's a technology similar to the internet. And, you know, we can really create a solution on one blockchain and at a certain point move to another or create a multi-blockchain solution. So right at this time, since Ethereum is the most popular blockchain at the moment to build dApps, as well as it's the blockchain that's used by the majority of exchanges and other solutions, you know, that allow for accounting, for AI, for IoT, We've chosen Ethereum to create our platform, and we're also developing a more enterprise-grade solution with several other partners at the moment. You know, whenever we are more ready to, you know, share that information, I'll definitely update you. You know, creating our own blockchain is no longer the path that most companies choose to do. That was done at the time when ICOs were popular, and creating your own coin on your own blockchain was the way to go. In fact, we're not raising funds with a utility coin or a security token at the moment for ourselves. Rather, what we're doing is creating a security token offering, essentially, or digital asset offering for a real estate asset. And that can be done easily on an Ethereum blockchain or any other blockchain for that matter.
Okay. A question. So when you're on the Ethereum blockchain, do you put all processes on the blockchain, i.e. payment, communication, all the like, or is there still some payments, for example, done through the normal banking system or communication? Is this done via email or stuff? Or do you put everything through your smart contract?
So the payments are done through regular payment systems at the moment, bank transfers. However, we're definitely going to touch up on that and integrate blockchain payment systems in the future, but we want to make it as easy as possible for anybody to invest. So we're not requiring anybody to purchase a specific token to invest it with. You know, if you want to do a bank transfer, you do a bank transfer. If you want to invest in with your cryptocurrency, you have the option to do that. In the future, we're also going to allow things like token swaps. So, you know, you can swap your security tokens one for the other, security token, utility tokens, and so on. So it's going to be very flexible. But one thing that you really touched upon that I think is super interesting is that the blockchain infrastructure is going to allow us to connect a lot of different solutions, specifically the accounting and the payment within the asset, because that will also create financial history of this asset that is going to be added to the same blockchain. So the buyer of the security token, the buyer of this property, you know, fractional buyer, is going to have access to this information before they buy.
Okay, so yeah, you're having a whole data trail that people can look at, and then, well, at the moment it's still a bit hard to look, but obviously at one point, when you have all kind of nice tools, then you can actually really nicely show what was going on with them, and there's like an interesting history.
Right.
History in available.
Right, absolutely. When
we talked earlier, you told me that the real estate for you is really sort of the sweet spot in terms of product market fit for tokenization, and much more so than, for example, equity. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes, absolutely. So I think it all boils down to product market fit. And first of all, as a product, tokenized real estate is a lot more, I guess, in demand than tokenized equity, because equity by nature is something that's much more easily transferable. You know, you can buy and sell companies or shares, and there are mechanisms and tools for that. With real estate, the majority of transactions, 99% of transactions, are kind of finite, complex, and take years to mature, and you can't get out. They're illiquid. There are some mechanisms like REITs, and there are, of course, crowdfunding for real estate where people are investing and are able to sell their investments. But it's still limited in nature and not in a sort of automated way. With equity, to start with, you know, you have stocks for public companies. You have some secondary market exchanges already for companies, whether blockchain-based or not blockchain-based. I think that at the end of the day, most things are going to be tokenized, equity included. At the moment, the valuation process, which is a crucial process for tokenization, because when we're issuing these securities, we have to take into account the present value of the asset. So with real estate, you have certain rules and standards when it comes to valuation of properties. And that's why you have organizations such as RICS, Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors based in the UK, and many others in different regions of the world that are overseeing and certifying appraisers for real estate. There is no such equivalent in the equity world. While there are certain standards and certain methodologies, you know, you can use DCF, discounted cash flows, or you can use various rules of thumb, you can use market comparisons, EY, Deloitte, and KPMG, you know, the big four accounting firms do have their own valuation methodologies, and yet it's still highly subjective. When you go negotiate for an investment round, you know, a VC will go and perform a valuation of your company, and yet it's still going to be open to negotiation. So it's slightly difficult in this situation to tokenize such a product. It will, I repeat that it will be possible. I think that it will require some sort of a standardization of valuation processes for other assets that are not real estate. You can do that for patents. You can do that for companies. You can do that for green energy agreements, for example, you know, like power purchasing agreements and things like that. And it's all going to be tokenized in the near future, but we want to start with real estate because we think it's, number one, the easiest, number two, solves an actual problem that will help, you know, the solution will help so many people.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Just one question that I was actually thinking about when we were talking there. So obviously when you have real estate, pretty much every country has an official real estate register. Where ownership is registered.
Recorded.
Do you update this based on these token things, or do you just hold a proxy holder in this real estate register, or does it depend on the market?
Right. So this is also a great question, more of a philosophical question. Number one, I'll tell you how it's done now, and also I'll tell you why I think it's also the right way to go. At the moment, we don't touch the asset registry. There is a uniform, or as you said, proxy registered entity, which is usually a company and an LLC of sorts, a special purpose vehicle, mm-hmm. where which is then split in fractions, whether it's going to be, you know, tokenized debt or tokenized equity that is then sold to the investors. So the investors are going to be listed on this public or possibly private in some cases ledger with blockchain. So there's definite advantage to that for asset managers, and because they'll have obviously the power to execute their strategy, and they're definitely super interested in keeping the asset value high because they are earning more money because they're holding a part of the asset as well when the asset value goes up. Now, on the other hand, a lot of people are saying, well, I want to have certain rights when it comes to my asset. I want to participate in decisions such as whether the asset should be sold or liquidated or renovated or whether more investment is going to be raised and so on. And, you know, there's different philosophical approach you can take. Number one, you can say, well, this is a different investment class. This is not like you buying an apartment, and this is not like you are a big organization going in on purchasing an asset together with your three partners. Let's say when you have three, four, five partners building, you know, acquiring or renovating an asset, then yes, you should have certain rights, governance rights to the property. But when we're talking about thousands of people owning, you know, investing in a new asset class, which is similar to that of stocks, you know, when you invest in Facebook, you don't expect to be able to make decisions on behalf of a company. So it's kind of like the same situation. So I don't necessarily think that every asset can have governance rights in tokenized property situations. However, that said, there is one situation in which I see that governance could be interesting, and that's urban renewal or urban projects financed by the citizens. So we're now in talks with different municipalities on providing them with a vehicle through which citizens can invest in things like stadiums, daycare facilities, or playgrounds, or skating rinks, things of that nature. Through which,
that's really interesting, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that, first of all, it's very beneficial for them because that and gets citizens involved, makes them care about the environment more, and makes them, you know, also possibly earn some income.
Yeah, this is micro thing. This is sort of something that I also looked at a couple of times, where you sort of look that blockchain allows you atomization, but it also allows you to care much more locally.
Exactly.
It's not this nameless real estate fund, but it's like, look, I want to invest in my neighborhood because, I think it could deal with some more childcare facilities or a football stadium. So that is actually very, very interesting. And yeah, I see.
Exactly. So in this case, you can actually blockchain can give you governance rights through a variety of platforms that already exist, where a large group of people can either select and vote for representatives or have different governance mechanisms in which together they can decide on, let's say, raising ticket prices or building additional facilities, using funds, and so on. So in that case, I see how that could be interesting. Again, that still does not require anybody's name to be listed on the property. If the main reason for that is governance, then then we provide a solution. Otherwise, legally, because we are issuing a security through a local regulator, you are entitled to this property's income or revenue or dividends or whatever the business model is going to be. So there is absolutely no difference between you owning the property except the governance.
Okay. And so when you do it through an SPV, would you do like one SPV per property? I mean, and now stepping back a little bit from these urban development projects, but let's talk more general about, look, I have a single property. So you would encapsulate every single property into an SPV?
At the moment, that's how it's done. However, I see a scenario in the future in which, let's say, a developer can create one SPV that owns, let's say, a hotel chain, say 30 hotels in a specific country or globally. In that case, we would have to still differentiate the tokens from property to property because each property has different value. So I think that for that, what we would do is we would still create a variety of tokens for each and then a collective index. Whether legally you will still have to tokenize issue a security separately is a question, and that's something that our legal advisors are working on right now. As of this moment, the only way it's done across the world is creating a single SPV per token, but I'm hoping that we're going to change that to make it easier.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the next question that I had there is like, look, what is the minimum viable property size that you can stick where it still makes sense to set up a single SPV and incur the costs, right? I mean, even if you create an SPV on a very standard template, you still incur a certain amount of cost. So how low can you go on a single property basis?
Right. That's a great question. So because the costs associated with tokenization are presently high, because you have to issue security, perform valuation, and do taxation advice, you know, set up this SPV. So at the moment, what we're telling clients is 3 to 5 million euro is the minimum, and I think that in the future it's going to go much, much lower.
Yeah, it can obviously, once you can issue on a standard documentation, once this is a little bit settled on whatever, life might be much, much easier. Okay, so 3 to 5 million, it's sort of, well, it's a single person property in London. But apart from this, it's like, it's actually, it's sort of mid-size.
Doable, really, definitely
yeah,
doable.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's not 100 million, 200 million, it's sort of like, but it's also more than a single house in most parts of the world. But it's like, well, it's getting there.
Yeah.
Any interesting deals, either specific or just sort of in general terms, that you have seen recently that you have come across that you could tell us about?
Right. So most of our deals are in the works, and we're going to be announcing a few of them on the 9th of September. We're going to do a really interesting event with live tokenization and an investment in Tel Aviv during the blockchain week. So until then, I'm holding off any announcements. But in general terms, we are seeing many, many deals. And obviously, as any real estate company, we're taking very few of the ones that we see. We're definitely diversifying, and different jurisdictions offer different rates of return. But we've seen deals in Spain, in Vienna, in Greece, in the UK. Some are large residential or commercial or hybrid projects. We're also seeing some deals in Malta that are super interesting. And we're looking at high growth markets. The key here, obviously, is the underlying deal. Tokenization is not going to change that. The deals are still have to be fantastic.
Yeah, you can take out a bit the cost, but ultimately you want the asset to perform. Yeah,
exactly. There's nothing, there was kind of this sense in the blockchain world and in the token world that many companies raised funds just because they were blockchain or just because they issued a token, without regard for competition or the underlying technology. So that's no longer the world in which we live. So the most interesting deals I think that we're going to see in tokenization are student living or co-living, medical facilities, some really interesting interesting schemes in which you can kind of improve valuation overnight by changing the zoning or changing the specialization or the type of real estate. And so we're going to announce some of these deals in September.
Okay, so it's mostly still commercial commercial things, but sort of this mid-scale commercial, right. But sort of from like starting from 5 million or 3 million to what is sort of the maximum project size that you would be looking at?
There is definitely no maximum, but we've looked at $100 million properties as well, and the property that we've tokenized last year it's a St. Regis in Aspen, Colorado, St. Regis Hotel.
Yeah, the famous the landmark deal in real estate blockchain, right? That sort of deal.
Exactly. So that's that was a very interesting deal because it's a Marriott brand, first of all. It's a very, very well-known hotel. And the owners, you know, decided that they want to renovate to increase the occupancy of the hotel. So so we tokenized $18 million and raised $18 million for this for this property, you know, issued standard tokens. So it was kind of a very, very interesting deal from that perspective, that existing investors were also participating and getting tokens for the deal.
So they were taking tokens. So existing investors who were used to, like, well, I want a paper contract, and they said, well, cool, now I'm getting myself a private key and Ethereum wallet and taking a token.
Okay, almost. But there is a caveat to that because, you know, you can hold your tokens via a custodian or a third party.
Okay, so it's just, which is fair enough, right, which I still think is actually the best solution for most people is they don't want to hold their private keys. They want to hold via third-party custodian. Yeah. There's still a lot of things. And your target market in terms of investors?
So it really depends on the size of the deal. If we're doing a deal that's up to 5 or 8 million euros, then we usually do crowdfunding regulation, and so we can raise from retail investors. And if we're doing a larger deal, then it's mainly accredited investors and institutions. So what I foresee happening with tokenization, in fact, is raising about 10% of the required capital from retail investors and the rest from accredited and institutional, and mainly because, you know, retail investor checks are much lower, but we still want to give people opportunities. And you will have the majority. Yeah, and you'll have the quantity-wise, you're going to have more retail investors, yeah? Mm-hmm. In terms of the number of investors coming.
It's a bit of a co-investment opportunity with the big guys, but at a decent price. And would this be more US-focused investors, or international, or Europe, or Asia, or what is sort of your...
Right. So the US actually surprised us about 2-3 weeks ago when they the SEC actually allowed or... approved this Reg A Plus deal. Regulation A Plus is the regulation that allows for raising from retail investors for up to $75 million. So we're actually want to take a part in this revolution and start raising from retail investors in the U.S. And apply for the regulation for the appropriate deals. The U.S. is the largest market for accredited investors, I believe, or at least in the developed world, where, you know, regulation is developed as well, because in many other countries there is no similar requirement. So I think that it's going to be a play on both retail and accredited, and similar things in Europe with smaller checks.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah. Thank you so much. This was ultra interesting, this interview. So thank you very much for taking the time.